Blog Talk Radio.
For radio as godless as our Constitution, tune in to Free Thought Radio.
Did you know there are 19 lawsuits against social distancing by churches and churchgoers?
Religion's War on Science is our theme this week. We'll be joined by skeptic Michael Shermer,
who will talk about that and debunk COVID-19 conspiracy theories.
This is the news in brief from the United Nations. The UN on Thursday launched a new initiative to combat the growing scourge of COVID-19 misinformation by increasing the volume and reach of trusted, accurate news on the pandemic. UN Secretary General Antonio Guterres, who announced the initiative, known as Verified, said the world could not hand over virtual space online to those who traffic in lies, fear and hate. The UN chief noted how misinformation spreads online in messaging apps and person-to-person through savvy production and distribution methods. To counter it, scientists and institutions like the UN need to reach people with accurate information they can trust, he added. Verified, led by the UN Department for Global Communications, home to UN News, will provide information around three themes: science to save lives, solidarity to promote local and global cooperation, and solutions to advocate for support to impacted populations. It will also promote recovery packages that tackle the climate crisis and address the root causes of poverty, inequality, and hunger. The UN Refugee Agency, UNHCR, and the International Organization for Migration, IOM, are calling on Malta and other European states to urgently bring to dry land around 160 rescued refugees and migrants still at sea aboard two Captain Morgan vessels. A separate group of 21 people, mostly women and children, were already evacuated and disembarked in Malta several days ago. Those remaining have been on board for some 2 weeks, the standard quarantine period for COVID-19, without any clarity on disembarkation. The agency said it was unacceptable to leave people at sea longer than necessary and raised concerns about reports that governments have been ignoring or delaying responses to distress calls, especially amid a sharp decrease in state-led and NGO search and rescue efforts. They reminded European states of their legal obligations to immediately assist people in distress, adding that they cannot be traded away with the offer of fuel and aid. Malaysia must halt an ongoing crackdown on migrants, journalists and civil society in the context of the fight against the coronavirus and do more to oppose xenophobia and hate speech, UN independent rights experts said on Thursday. Felipe González Morales, the special rapporteur on the human rights of migrants, said he was alarmed by what's happening in Malaysia after what was initially a positive attitude of the government towards an inclusive response. The current crackdown and hate campaign are severely undermining the effort to fight the pandemic in the country, he said, urging, along with other experts, for the Malaysian authorities to refrain from raiding locked down areas to arrest and detain migrants. Matt Wells, UN News.
Welcome to Democracy Now!, democracynow.org, the Quarantine Report. I'm Amy Goodman. Another 2.4 million Americans applied for unemployment last week as the coronavirus pandemic continues to push the country to its worst economic crisis since the Great Depression. More than 38.6 million Americans have sought unemployment benefits in the past 9 weeks, and economists warn over 40% of the jobs may never come back. Federal Reserve Chair Jerome Powell has warned unemployment could reach a staggering 25% by the end of June. Despite this, Senate Majority Leader Mitch McConnell's rejecting calls to extend enhanced unemployment benefits, which are set to expire in July. Meanwhile, the number of homeowners who did not pay their mortgage jumped by 1.6 million in April, a new monthly record. And new data from the Census Bureau found nearly half of all American adults say they're a member of their household had lost unemployment, having lost employment income since mid-March. But not all Americans have suffered. One new report found the wealth of the nation's billionaires has increased by $434 billion, or 15%, since the pandemic began. This is Chuck Collins of the Institute for Policy Studies.
Since March 18th, 38.5 million people have filed for unemployment. Over that same 2 months, billionaire wealth has surged $434 billion in that short time. And we're seeing the billionaire class in the United States overall is seeing their wealth accelerate in the last couple months. Even Jeff Bezos and Mark Zuckerberg's wealth combined has gone up $60 billion since March 18.
Fears are growing Latin America could become the new epicenter of the COVID-19 pandemic. In Brazil, the death toll has topped 20,000 after nearly 1,200 deaths were reported Thursday. It was the country's deadliest day to date. Mexico's also reported over 400 new COVID deaths and nearly 3,000 new coronavirus cases Thursday, both new single-day records. Cases are also rapidly rising in Peru and Chile. 60% of all new COVID cases are now in South America, Asia and Africa. India and Indonesia both reported new daily highs of coronavirus cases Thursday. China's reported a new coronavirus outbreak in the province of Jilin near the border of Russia and North Korea. And Singapore reported about 450 new cases, nearly all among migrants who live in crowded dorms built for foreign workers. Meanwhile, in the Middle East, the number of cases in Gaza doubled Thursday from 20 to 49, raising fears of a new outbreak. As coronavirus spreads across the global south, a new World Bank report estimates some 3 billion people still don't have access to clean water and soap to wash their hands, one of the most effective ways to prevent transmission of the coronavirus. Here in the United States, the death toll from the COVID-19 outbreak has topped 95,000. Flags will be flown at half staff over Memorial Day weekend to remember the lives lost to coronavirus. President Trump issued the order after Democratic leaders on Capitol Hill asked flags to be lowered on the day when the U.S. death toll tops 100,000. In Alabama, the capital city of Montgomery has been forced to divert COVID patients to Birmingham due to a shortage of intensive care beds. This comes just days after Republican Governor Kay Ivey opened much of Alabama. Meanwhile, in North Carolina, 570 chicken processing workers have tested positive at a single Tyson plant. President Trump toured a Ford manufacturing plant in Michigan that was repurposed to make personal protective equipment. Trump refused to wear a mask while speaking to the press inside the plant in defiance of an executive order from the state's governor and the plant's own rules. Trump said he wore one during a tour of a Ford plant, but took it off before speaking to reporters.
Well, I had one on before. I wore one in this back area, but I didn't want to give the press the pleasure of seeing it.
Photos later emerged showing Trump wearing a mask during a tour of the plant. Trump's visit to Michigan came at a time when the state is facing 3 major crises. The COVID outbreak has killed more than 5,100 people in Michigan. The state's unemployment rate is at an all-time high of 22.7%, and more than 10,000 homes were evacuated in Midland, the home of Dow Chemical, after 2 dams breached earlier this week after heavy rainfall. The New York Times reports nursing homes with African American and Latino populations have been twice as likely to get hit by coronavirus outbreaks as predominantly white nursing homes. Overall, 34,000 residents and staff at long-term care facilities have died from COVID. That's about a third of the nation's overall death toll. Meanwhile, the Anti-Racist Research and Policy Center has helped launch a COVID racial data tracker to document how the pandemic is devastating communities of color. The site highlights how the pandemic has taken the lives of nearly 20,000 African Americans. While Black people account for 13% of the nation's population, they've accounted for 25% of the deaths during the pandemic. Ibram X. Kendi, who heads the Anti-Racist Center, said the tracker is needed because the federal government is failing to collect racial demographic data.
We felt it was necessary to build the most comprehensive data set available and make presentable for people to understand the racial disparities we're actually seeing all over this country. And hopefully people will use the tracker to recognize what communities are the most vulnerable in their states and ensure that those communities are Our policy is changing, and those communities are receiving relief.
Following weeks of outcry, authorities in Georgia have arrested the man who filmed the killing of Ahmaud Arbery, a 25-year-old Black man who was chased down and shot to death by two white men February 23rd. William Bryan, who is white, was arrested on charges of felony murder and criminal attempt to commit false imprisonment. He filmed the disturbing video showing Arbery jogging down a narrow road in Brunswick, Georgia, in broad daylight before being ambushed. Retired police officer Gregory McMichael and his son Travis were both arrested and charged with murder and aggravated assault earlier this month. We'll have more on this story after headlines. The Trump administration's announced it'll withdraw from another major international arms control deal, the Open Skies Treaty, which the George H.W. Bush administration signed in 1992. The deal allows the United States, Russia, and 33 other countries to fly unarmed observation aircraft over the other's territory to help reduce the risk of war. Last year, Trump withdrew from the Intermediate Range Nuclear Forces Treaty with Russia. On Thursday, Trump's arms control negotiator, Marshall Belingslia, criticized Russia and China and warned that the United States is prepared to outspend anyone in a new nuclear arms race.
Said the president's made clear that we have a tried and true practice here. We know how to win these races, and we know how to spend the adversary into oblivion. And if we have to, we will. But we sure would like to avoid it.
In news from Capitol Hill, 29 House Democrats are calling on Congress to reduce this year's military budget. In a letter they wrote, "We must remain focused on combating the coronavirus and not on increasing military spending that already outpaces the next 10 closest nations combined." The letter was organized by Congresswoman Barbara Lee of California and Mark Pocan of Wisconsin. More than 80 deaths have been reported in eastern India and Bangladesh after Cyclone Amphan battered the region, leaving millions of people without power, damaging crops and destroying thousands of homes. It was the strongest cyclone to hit the region in over two decades. The worst damage was reported in the eastern Indian state of West Bengal, where many lost their homes.
Due to yesterday's rain, my house was wrecked. A tree fell on it. Everything is destroyed. Where will we stay? We used to work in Odisha, but due to the lockdown, everything is closed. There is no work and no income. My husband works in Odisha, and he's stuck there and is unable to send us money. How will I build my home? I have used up the money my husband sent to build a mud wall. But what will I eat now?
China's most important political event of the year, the National People's Congress, has begun after a two-month delay due to the coronavirus outbreak. The Congress is expected to approve a new security law in Hong Kong that would reportedly criminalize, quote, foreign interference and secessionist activities and the subversion of state power, unquote. Opposition lawmakers in Hong Kong claim such a move would end the autonomy of the former British colony, which has been rocked by protests over the past year. Dennis Kwok is member of the Hong Kong Legislative Council.
I just want to say to the international community that this is the end of Hong Kong. This is the end of one country, two systems. Make no mistake about it, that Beijing, the Central People's Government, has completely breached its promise to the Hong Kong people.
The international humanitarian aid organization Oxfam has announced it's laying off nearly 1,500 employees, a third of its staff, and withdrawing operations from 18 countries, including Afghanistan, Rwanda, Sierra Leone, and Haiti. Oxfam facing a funding shortage due to the pandemic. Donations to Oxfam also fell after news broke 2 years ago that Oxfam had covered up sexual abuse and misconduct allegations against staff working in Haiti during a 2011 post-earthquake relief effort. The Senate has confirmed John Ratcliffe to be the new director of national intelligence in a party line vote. He'll become the fourth person to hold the job within the past year. Meanwhile, the Senate Foreign Relations Committee has advanced the nomination of right-wing filmmaker Michael Pack to head the U.S. Agency for Global Media, which operates various state-run media outlets, including Voice of America. Pack's worked closely with Steve Bannon, the former Trump advisor who once headed Breitbart News. In media news, The Atlantic is laying off 68 workers and freezing salaries, even though the magazine has reported record online traffic and a spike in subscriptions. Most of the layoffs will be in The Atlantic's live events division. And Food Not Bombs is marking its 40th anniversary this weekend. The worldwide all-volunteer movement recovers food that would otherwise be discarded and provides free vegan and vegetarian meals in over 1,000 cities in 65 countries. The movement began in 1980 to protest the U.S. military budget, poverty, and destruction of the environment. Food Not Bombs volunteers have been arrested dozens of times while attempting to feed the hungry. And those are some of the headlines. This is Democracy Now!, democracynow.org, The Quarantine Report. I'm Amy Goodman.
This is Free Thought Radio with co-hosts Dan Barker and Annie Laurie Gaylor. Irreverent views, news, music, and interviews.
Imagine that. No heaven.
Welcome to Free Thought Radio. I'm Annie Laurie Gaylor. This is a radio show and podcast for those of you who aren't remotely religious, who choose none of the above when it comes to deities, and who think that the supernatural isn't super.
I get it. Remotely. We're doing our show remotely today. I'm Dan Barker, and this is the May 21st, 2020 edition of Free Thought Radio. And Buzz Kemper is producing this show remotely in his recording studio, Audio for the Arts, in downtown Madison, while Annie Laurie and I are hosting from our Safer at Home studio 3 miles away here in Madison, Wisconsin. So, Buzz, you told me that you and Noah just did something to make it more elegant. The sound quality is great.
Oh, well, thank you. Yeah, Noah had a way of using a piece of equipment that we owned but hadn't really been utilizing to its full extent. And he said, oh, we can use this for the Free Thought Radio show. And so we hooked it up, and it works. So thank you to Noah.
So it's very elegant. Should I be wearing a tuxedo today, maybe?
I'm in a T-shirt, so I think
you could
fine.
Tell people you are. I think it was a little silly. Free Thought Radio is the weekly production of the Freedom From Religion Foundation. I am a co-founder of that group. It went national in 1978, and our two purposes are to educate the public about non-theism. So we serve as a national association of freethinkers, atheists, and agnostics, and we also work to uphold the constitutional principle of separation between state and church. And we have over 32,000 members in North America. If you are one, thank you. If you're not, we would love to have you join us today at ffrf.org, or to send you more information, you can just click on the Ask for Info link at our homepage at ffrf.org, and we'd be glad to send you our newspaper, Free Thought Today, and more information.
In the second half of today's show, we're going to talk with the editor of Skeptic Magazine, the author Michael Shermer. He has a new book out. It's called Giving the Devil His Due. But we're also going to talk about his recent article, COVID-19 Conspiracists and Their Discontents.
And talk a little bit, about science denial. This week on our TV show, Free Thought Matters, we talk with the intellectual power couple, Steve Pinker and Rebecca Neuberger Goldstein. Steve Pinker is FFRF's honorary president, and Rebecca is one of our honorary directors. And this scientist-philosophy duo joined us via Skype from their home in Cape Cod to talk about their work and current projects. And we won't tell you, you'll have to watch the show to find out more about their great books that are coming out. Steve is the author of Enlightenment Now, of course. And we decided to end the show with a quick series of lightning round questions about the existence of God. So this is a sneak preview.
Well, how can we be good without God?
Now, there, that's one of my favorite arguments, and it was an argument that meant an awful lot to me when I was growing up as a religious little kid. I was reading all these science books, So I could see how theory of natural selection could do away with the argument from design, and I thought what was wrong with the cosmological argument, the argument for first cause, all of that. But morality, it's so mysterious because it seems to be not empirical, so it seems to be, you know, sort of transcendent. And that is when I read Bertrand Russell's Why I Am Not a Christian. My parents didn't mind my reading that book because we were Jewish. They didn't want me Christian, right? So it was fine to read that book. And he dismantles that argument so beautifully. And actually goes back to Plato. And it's basically, look, either God had a reason for choosing the moral rules or he didn't. If he had a reason, that's the reason. We don't need God. He's redundant. Or he had absolutely no reason at all. It's just arbitrary. His whim, caprice. How does that answer our question about morality? It's just a beautifully elegant argument.
So we have about 30 seconds. Steve, here's a fastball for you. Going back to Aristotle, everything that's moving was put into motion, so there must have been a prime mover. How do you explain that?
Well, the laws of physics seem to do just fine without a prime mover, and the great contribution of Galileo was that we live in a clockwork universe where laws act going forward. They don't direct themselves towards some end. Organisms do, machines do, but not the laws of nature.
I wish we had more time. Yeah. We're out of time.
Well, for rationality, enlightenment mattering, we are very honored that you joined us today. Thank you so much.
Thanks so much, and congratulations for all the great work you do.
Yes.
So that's Steve Pinker and Rebecca Neuberger-Goldstein. We talk about intellectual power couple. This show, Free Thought Matters, this particular episode, is already up on FFRF's YouTube channel. It's broadcasting on Sunday, but it's already up. There's a Free Thought Matters playlist. It airs in 13 cities, and if you want to spread the word about it, you can go to our homepage, ffrf.org, go to the news link. There's a drop down, and you can read more about Free Thought Matters in the 13 cities that it airs in, including Madison on Sundays at 11 p.m. on Channel 9. But it will be ending, the season will be ending in 2 weeks, and then we'll be back in the fall. So we told you last week how some of our neighbors have been gathering each night for a sing-along out in front of our street. Shemaine Mills of Wisconsin Public Radio, who happens to live on our street, produced a story about face masks that aired this morning across the state. Here's a clip from that story that includes some of our singing. I think you can hear Dan setting the key for the song with our neighbor who plays the ukulele.
There have been mixed messages on whether to wear a mask. Initially, people were told not to. Out of concern, they would use N95 respirators and surgical masks desperately needed for healthcare workers. Instead, some people started covering their face with cloth masks while shopping, running, and even during sidewalk sing-alongs.
Okay, you are my sunshine.
What's the key? You are my sunshine. You are my sunshine, like that?
You never know.
This group of neighbors on Madison's Near West Side were inspired by Italians who sang from their balconies while coronavirus raged across the country. The singers in the Dudgeon Monroe neighborhood give each other a wide berth in the street, and for extra measure, everyone wears a face mask. That includes 72-year-old Wilton Sanders. He says he's terrified of the virus and wipes down surfaces inside his home daily. When he goes out with his wife, Sue, the faces are covered.
Distancing is really what we do. The mask is more a statement that, I'm looking out for you, so I'd appreciate it if you'd look out for me. But, it's only a third of the people who have masks on.
So Wilt Sanders, our neighbor that you just heard, he's an astrophysicist who says he's even more of an atheist than I am, if you can believe that. He and his wife, Sue, have been really good friends for many years.
Yeah, so that was fun. So, not so fun, Vice President Mike Pence gave an interview on Fox News last week in which he defended the rights of churches to hold worship services during the shutdown.
The liberties enshrined in the Constitution still apply to every American, even in the middle of a national emergency.
And I would concur, but very ironically, Pence and his followers and governors who believe like him don't believe in constitutional liberties for abortion rights. So some irony there that you're trying to keep people safe, including in churches, by having a shutdown, but you're going to shut down essential services, constitutional rights that you have for abortion. So some hypocrisy there.
So Pence really is a strong, he says he's a Christian first, and during that same interview, he displayed his belief that it's faith that makes America strong.
When our communities of faith are strong, America is strong, and the needs of our most vulnerable are cared for. And we've seen that throughout this epidemic.
We've seen throughout the epidemic Pence shilling for the churches, saying, give them money. And they certainly are getting a lot of money. And that is one of the issues that has come up this week for the Freedom From Religion Foundation. The Washington Post had an op-ed on May 13th pointing out a contradiction about churches reacting to the pandemic. On the one hand, churches argue that the free exercise clause of the First Amendment entitles them to special exemptions from stay-at-home orders. On the other hand, they also assert that churches can and must be treated just like non-religious organizations when it comes to taxpayer funding. And I don't think we've said so far on Freethought Radio this month that the fact is that a whopping 9,000 Catholic churches were approved for federal funding under the Paycheck Protection Program. 40% of Protestant churches applied for funding, and half of those applications have been accepted, according to a survey by Lifeway Research. This means federal tax dollars are paying the salaries of pastors and other employees for religious purposes. Unprecedented to have taxpayers basically taxed to promote, to support churches. So that's one issue. But the other issue is that these churches demanding this kind of payout are also saying that the shutdown rules do not apply to them. A couple days ago, Dan, at the end of the day, I started to get curious about how many lawsuits were going on with churches or churchgoers suing governors and other states. And I found 19 cases. And there's probably some more being filed right now.
So 19 different churches or more
and
than
churchgoers, and often multiple churches and pastors who are suing in one case. And we are, I think, most shockingly seeing the Justice Department intervening on behalf of some of these churches, because Attorney General William Barr issued that memo a couple of weeks ago that we talked about earlier, signaling support for church gatherings, threatening to go after governors who shut down churches along with other enterprises. And in fact, just on Tuesday, they sent a threatening letter to the California governor, Gavin Newsom. And of course, there is proof of multiple spreads of the coronavirus through church gatherings. CNN reported recently one worshiper who had the coronavirus ended up, he defied California's order and he attended a religious service on Mother's Day. He exposed 180 people. In a case in Sacramento County in April, CNN reports that 71 people connected to a single church were infected. The Centers for Disease Control and Prevention announced in mid-May that two persons with COVID-19 unknowingly spread the virus to more than 30 people during church gatherings in early March in Arkansas. And this is before there was a known case in Arkansas. And I think the most famous case that CDC has identified was a super spreader who went to church on went to a choir practice on March 17th in Skagit County, Washington, and he spread the coronavirus to 32 confirmed cases, 20 other likely infections. There were 3 hospitalizations and 2 deaths. So choir practice and many other things that uniquely happen in a church make people very vulnerable. And you would think churches would want to protect their staff in their congregation, but they're more interested in that collection plate, apparently. And so we do see this religious war against science does have life and death consequences. But so there's not time to go into every detail, but the states where taxpayers are, or churches or churchgoers are suing include California, Colorado. That's an interesting case because a Catholic sued and said, I can't take Eucharist, I can't go to Mass, nobody's hearing my confessions. And a federal judge in Denver in April dismissed his case by pointing out that your Catholic church, your bishops, excuse me, closed down all churches earlier than the shutdown order. In other words, there was nothing that courts could do to satisfy this man who wanted to confess. So that was thrown out. But some of them are winning. There's Delaware, Illinois, Kansas, Kentucky. Kentucky is one of one of the cases where the churches prevailed against Democratic Governor Andy Beshear. They said he could not temporarily ban mass gatherings at churches. He got a federal judge that ruled that way. Most of them are not winning or they're continuing. Louisiana, Maine, Michigan, there a bunch of churches are suing Governor Gretchen Whitmer. That state is having such difficulty with the coronavirus and now flooding. And there's a minister who runs a mega church. It's the Word of Faith International Christian Church in Southfield. They have 6,000 members. They want to have full church services now. And she complained, we have to physically distance people 6 feet apart. That means we'd have to have more than our usual service. That's the complaint. And I could go on and on. These churches and churchgoers who want to be exposed to the coronavirus.
Well, we have to take a break. In The Nation magazine, there was a great quote this week saying, it tells you all you need to know that by early May, more than 30 evangelical pastors had died of COVID-19 across the Bible Belt. We'll be back after the break with some comfort music by Stephen Foster. Then we're going to talk with Michael Shermer, editor of The Skeptic magazine, about COVID-19 conspiracists and their discontents. I'm Dan Barker.
I'm Annie Laurie Gaylor.
Stay tuned for more Free Thought Radio.
It ain't necessarily so. This is Free Thought Radio.
Welcome back. I'm Annie Laurie Gaylor.
And I'm Dan Barker. And today is the anniversary of the birth of the poet Alexander Pope. He was born in England on May 21st, 1688. He contracted tuberculosis with other complications of the spine, which gave him a hunchback and an adult height of 4 feet 6 inches. Despite this, he became a published poet by his teens. He was a deist who reflected the views of the Enlightenment, and he became his generation's most respected and popular poet. He was able to support himself with his writings. Pope contributed many immortal phrases, such as damning with faint praise, a little learning is a dangerous thing, and to err is human, to forgive is divine.
Alexander Pope's most famous couplet is, know then thyself, presume not God to scan, the proper study of mankind is man.
The Essay on Man is a grouping of epistles which also contains the lines, for modes of faith let graceless zealots fight. He can't be wrong whose life is in the right.
Pope also wrote, slave to no sect who takes no private road, but looks through nature up to nature's God.
His universal prayer rejected religious motivations in favor of human morality. He said, what conscience dictates to be done or warns me not to do, this teach me more than hell to shun, that more than heaven pursue.
So you can find out more about Alexander Pope, funny name for a freethinker, and other freethinkers in history at FFRF's Free Thought of the Day website. That's FFRF.org/day. Now, let's move a century and a half later to the American songwriter Stephen Foster. Regular listeners on this show know that Stephen Foster was not religious. So for some comfort music today, we are going to play his song, Hard Times Come Again No More. And it's sung remotely by the Canadian singer-songwriter Rufus Wainwright with his family and friends, and some of them are famous Canadian singers, on the 60th and final day of his Quarantunes project, where all of the musicians performed remotely.
Let us pause in life's pleasure. While we all sub sorrow with the poor, there's a song that
was Rufus Wainwright and his family and friends performing Stephen Foster's Hard Times Come Again No More during the social distancing quarantine project. So everybody was
quarantine
project. Everybody was remote and putting this together. The other performers, and you're going to recognize some of their names, include his sister, Martha Wainwright, his aunts, Anna McGarrigle and Jane McGarrigle, niece and nephew, Lily and Sylvan Lankin, Vinnie Dow, Gigi and Islay McMillan, Kathleen and Peter Weldon, Patrick Ferris and Joel Ziftkin. And you cannot help but think of the poor people in India and Bangladesh right now. Talk about hard times.
And you can see the video, amazing video of that Quarantunes project, including this song. Just look up Rufus Wainwright, Quarantunes. So we're going to take a break. Stay tuned. After the break, we're going to talk with Michael Shermer, editor of The Skeptic magazine. He's the author of the new book, Giving the Devil His Due. He will tell us about COVID-19 conspiracists and their discontents. I'm Dan Barker.
I'm Annie Laurie Geller.
Stay tuned. We'll be back with more Free Thought Radio.
Beware of dogma. This is Free Thought Radio.
I'm Annie Laurie Gaylor.
And I'm Dan Barker. And we have on the phone with us Michael Shermer. Michael Shermer is the publisher of Skeptic magazine. We've had him on our show a number of times talking about some of his numerous books. He's a presidential fellow at Chapman University. He's the author of 20 books, including Why People Believe Weird Things, The Science of Good and Evil, Why Darwin Matters, and The Moral Arc, which we've talked about with Michael on this show before.
And Michael Shermer's most recent book, which just came out last month, is called Giving the Devil His Due, Reflections on a Scientific Humanist. It was published by Cambridge University Press, and the book is a defense of free speech. Earlier this month, Michael Shermer had an article printed in Quillette called COVID-19 Conspiracists and Their Discontents. And Michael, where are we talking to you from again?
Oh, I'm in Santa Barbara, California, where I live now.
Well, thank you. Santa Barbara. Beautiful.
Wow,
good,
that is beautiful.
It's a good place to be socially isolated.
Yeah.
You know, and for us writers and researchers, you know, most of our work is done in isolation anyway. And I'm a cyclist. I ride a couple hours a day, and that's usually done by myself anyway. So I haven't really noticed any huge changes other than the parks are closed where I take my little four-year-old boy. It's not that bad.
I noticed that some of your earlier books were about cycling, so you're still keeping that up, huh?
Well, you said 20 books. I don't count my cycling books in the 80s and early 90s. Yeah, but I still ride just recreationally. I'm old and slow now. I'm 65, but I try to stay with the group. You know, when we used to do group rides here, so I have to get out every day to stay fit for that. But mainly, I just enjoy being outdoors with the scenery flowing by and the air in my face and all that stuff. I can't stand, for example, riding stationary bikes in a hotel, you know, gym. I just can't. It's just horrible. I can see why people don't like exercising if that's what you have to do.
It's boring to do that, huh?
Yeah, incredibly boring. But also what's made it better now is there's so much audio content available to listen to, books on tape, you know, audio books and teaching company courses and podcasts. The podcasts have gotten so good now. So much good content that just goes on and on for hours. You know, I think it's the future of, at least partial future of education. You know, I'm a professor, and the last 3 months, 2.5 months, I've been recording lectures remotely and posting them online, and my students watch them and take a little quiz. And, you know, why do they have to pay $50,000 a year for that? So, I mean, it doesn't replace the seminar where you're in a small room with the professor and there's just, you know, 15 students. That can't be done by Zoom very well. But just the transfer of knowledge from one skull to another, you know, there's so many other options that are more economical. I think that could change the future of higher education.
You have some articles or lectures online that any of us can subscribe to. Isn't that true?
Yeah, so if you go to skeptic.com, and you'll see on the homepage Skepticism 101 course lectures. They're all free and available for everybody to watch. I figured, you know, while I'm doing the work, I might as well just post them publicly for everybody to watch. Yeah. And so I've been doing that. I mean, I was inspired in part by Steve Pinker doing that with his Harvard course. I mean, here's a classic example. You know, Harvard's, you know, one of the greatest institutions in the world, and Steve is one of their star professors. You can take his class in rationality for free. You don't have to pay $50,000.
Hey, I didn't know that, and we just interviewed him, and it didn't even occur to me to ask that. That's
fantastic.
Well, he's
writing a new book on that topic right now, too. So
yeah, that's right. So. Yeah, so, you know, I think I'm really encouraged by all the options, intellectual options that are available for anybody that are either free or super cheap. Even the teaching company courses, they used to be expensive, hundreds of dollars for an entire course. You have to buy one course and grind through all the lectures. Now they have a subscription service like Netflix or Hulu where you pay, I don't know, it's like $15 a month, and you can have access to all of their courses, all of their lectures individually on an app on your smartphone. And if you get bored with a course or you're not interested in a particular lecture, you just skip to the next one or you scroll over and find some other course you want to listen to. And they're just fantastic. They're recorded in studios professionally, and these are the best professors in the world that are teaching the courses. And, you know, it's cheap. It's unbelievably just so accessible for everybody.
So brains are getting cheaper here. Speaking of Steven Pinker, he wrote a really good blurb for your newest book. Your newest book is called Giving the Devil His Due, Reflections of a Scientific Humanist. Steven Pinker said, Michael Shermer is our most fearless explorer of alternative, crackpot, and dangerous ideas, and at the same time, one of our most powerful voices for science, sanity, and humane values. Do you blush a little bit when Pinker says
yeah, a little bit. I mean, but that's what blurbs are for, you know, back jacket blurbs are for,
well,
or for that purpose. So the book, you know, the devil is whoever disagrees with you or you disagree with or you find, you know, hateful or you don't like their opinions or you find their thoughts dangerous. That's who we have to give the devil their due. And the reason is for your own safety's sake. That is to say, if what happens when if you sign off on censorship of speech and thought, what happens when you're the person challenging the dogma, the mainstream, and you're standing alone against the winds of momentum by the masses, and you want to be heard, and if you've signed off on censorship, then there's no reason why you shouldn't be silent. So I make the argument from kind of a rights perspective and a practical perspective that you know, we need to tolerate other people's opinions, you know, for our own safety's sake. You know, and from there, I then go through all the kind of standard John Stuart Mill type arguments that, you know, you might be wrong, and this is a way to correct yourself. And even if you're right, you know, you can strengthen your arguments by listening to what other people say on the other side. So, for example, my students are all pretty liberal. They're pro-choice on the abortion issue. And so when I ask them, you know, what's the best arguments for the pro-life side, you know, they don't know because they've never really explored that. And, you know, or other than, you know, well, Republicans hate women. It's like, well, that's not really the argument they make. That's just kind of an impugning motive. What are they actually arguing? And so even if you go through the pro-life arguments and you disagree with them, your pro-choice position is going to be stronger by knowing what those arguments are. So that's kind of a case study.
So there are a lot of crackpots out there. I mean, to some degree, don't people have to kind of earn the right to be heard? I mean, after a while, you've heard some of these crackpot evangelical or religious theories so much that why waste your time?
Yeah, well, I agree. There is a lot of crackpots. So in part, I'm talking about the government censorship or even institutional censorship. But you're not obliged to listen to anybody. I'm just saying don't actively silence other people, but you don't have to pay attention to them. You can ignore them. I mean, but my case example of that is Milo Yiannopoulos, who I find very entertaining, but he's a professional provocateur. He goes at the height of his fame. He was going to college campuses every week, and you know, his whole goal was to poke the hornet's nest of the so-called snowflake social justice warriors to run off to their safe spaces because the evil Milo Yiannopoulos is coming. Well, you know, he just relished all these protesters being out there, and I was tweeting at the time, you know, if you really want to hurt Milo or protest him, just don't go to his talk. Just ignore him. And as a public speaker, I can attest that there's nothing more depressing than a half-empty room. You know, that's the last thing somebody like that wants. So, you know, you don't have to protest. You don't have to read other people's opinions. You could just ignore them, and that's fine.
Well, speaking of crackpot opinions, you have this piece in Quillette called COVID-19 Conspiracists and Their Discontents. And there are a lot of conspiracy theories going on about the coronavirus, aren't there?
Yeah, this is a perfect storm for conspiracism because you have a couple of factors at work. It's a threat, a real threat. So, of course, we pay attention to real threats. And then there's so much unknown about it. You know, it's an invisible force, you know, like nuclear power. You can't smell it, see it, taste it, touch it. You know, it's just like the, you know, witches in the Middle Ages. They have these invisible powers over us. And a virus is, sort of feels like that cognitively. And then we don't know what to do exactly. Social isolation, closing down the economy. Did we do it too soon, too late? You know, different places try different things. Is there a vaccine or not? Will there be a vaccine or not? What about hydroxychloroquine? What about remdesivir, whatever that other one is, and so on? You know, that kind of level of unknown, you know, the mind abhors a vacuum of causal explanation, and short of that from science, people just glom on to whatever they can find. And unfortunately or fortunately, the internet provides, you know, endless streams of these. And then you have power vacuums or, you know, power differentials. So, of course, it was predictable that Bill Gates would be fingered as being behind the COVID-19 pandemic because he's always been a target for conspiracists, as, you know, wanting to take over the world or control entire populations or whatever. I mean, I remember back in the 90s.
That really surprises me, though. I mean, I just think here's this guy who's given huge amounts of money to try to come up with a vaccine and to try to vaccinate the world and help people, and then he's turned into this villain by these ignorant people.
Yeah. Yeah, so, I mean, it's kind of a test case for me of free speech because, you know, do we really want to have somebody making YouTube videos saying, you know, don't wear masks and, you know, that kind of thing? Well, no, but we want people to follow the science. But on the other hand, since we don't know for sure, you know, I say just let all the flowers bloom and see what, you know, what remains after a few months of testing. So now when Google, who owns YouTube, takes down somebody's conspiracy video, you know, that's their right to do so. They're a private company. But I'd be disinclined to move in that direction because what happens when we move toward the center of more moderate scientists who, say, disagree with Fauci? You know, they're not conspiracy nuts. They just are not convinced of the arguments from the, you know, CDC, say. Well, I think
we have to take a break, Mike. Sorry to interrupt you. We got to take a break here. We'll be back, and we want to talk more about some other coronavirus conspiracies when we come back. We're talking with Michael Shermer. He's the editor of Skeptic Magazine, author of the new book, Giving the Devil His Due. Stay tuned. I'm Dan Barker with Annie Laurie Gaylor. We'll be back with more
and
Free Thought Radio.
More debunking of corona conspiracies.
Protect the First Amendment. It protects you. This is Free Thought Radio.
I'm Dan Barker.
I'm Annie Laurie Gaylor.
We're continuing our conversation with the author, the editor of Skeptic Magazine, Michael Shermer. He has a new book out called Giving the Devil His Due. And we've been talking about an article that he just wrote about COVID-19 conspiracy theories.
And you had an article in Quillette called COVID-19 Conspiracists and Their Discontent. So we didn't quite finish talking about that, Michael. One of the conspiracies that seems to interest you the most is this one related to 5G towers. Do you want to explain that?
Yeah. So again, you know, just the coincidental rollout of 5G in certain places in conjunction with the pandemic starting, you know, of course, you know, people glommed onto that as somehow, you know, related. Of course they're not, but, you know, and people were worried about 4G and 3G and, you know, go all the way back to Motorola flip phones in the 1990s. People worried about, you know, holding something up next to your skull. You know, this could lead to brain cancers and all that. So that whole idea, again, it's kind of an invisible force, a power, this, you know, electromagnetic spectrum. You can't see it. Well, you can see it, but not those kind of waves. And in conjunction with the invisible virus, you know, people sort of glommed onto that. And then
Michael, to explain, people glommed onto that, and they thought that the 5G towers were the real source of the coronavirus.
Well,
right?
There's a couple of different conspiracies. That's one. The other one is that it's a cover-up for something else that, you know, that somebody nefarious is doing behind the scenes. Usually it's related to something powerful. So 5G corporations are big companies that, you know, people fear big corporations on the left, and people on the right fear big government agencies like the CDC, and then you throw in the anti-vaxxers who jumped into there very predictably because they've been making these arguments since the 90s. So you throw all that together and you end up with just this hodgepodge of conspiracism, the speed of which I've been stunned by. I mean, just usually these things take a while to roll out, but, you know, because of the social isolation, maybe people are spending more time online reading this stuff.
You know, I have to say that conspiracy theory, my eyes glaze over. I just am not interested in this at all, but I have to admit that I kind of like to watch fictional conspiracy theories, you know, like movies like Michael Crichton's Coma, that kind of thing.
Yeah.
Is there just an entertainment value in this for people? As you say, the mind abhors a vacuum. They just find it entertaining to spin all these delusional ideas.
It is entertaining. It's kind of fun. I mean, the idea of, you know, the QAnon is the latest conspiracy theory, not related necessarily to COVID-19, but when for Trump. Now, usually the right is concerned about big government telling us what to do and taking away my freedoms, you know, but they support Trump. It's like, well, that's your guy. Ah, he's actually fighting against the deep state, and he and QAnon are you know, secretly protecting us from the deep state. And I mean, this just goes on and on. So of course, the moment the COVID-19 pandemic hit, you know, then that got wrapped into that as well. So people out of power always fear those in power. Usually, the political party that loses becomes more conspiratorial. The political party that wins drops their conspiracy theories. In the case of Trump, that didn't happen. So that's kind of peculiar.
So, but why? I mean, you wrote a book called Why People Believe Weird Things. What's behind the human race's proclivity to latch onto conspiracies and science denial?
Well, so in part, you know, it's patternicity, a tendency to find meaningful patterns in random noise. We all do that, and that's what a conspiracy theory is. But I should note parenthetically that there are real conspiracies. I mean, Volkswagen conspiring to cheat the emission standards, that's a conspiracy. Or
Watergate.
So there's enough of this, you know, like people are worried about Big Pharma now and vaccines and so on. Well, Big Pharma does cheat the system. You know, lots of companies like the Purdue Pharmaceutical and the Sackler family, I mean, they've been hacking the FDA for decades, making billions of dollars on the, you know, OxyContin. That's a conspiracy of sorts. But it's not the kind that, you know, makes X-Files with the cigarette-smoking man behind the scenes. It's a little more dangerous and nefarious than that. But there's enough of that that people, you know, should be kind of skeptical of some of these things.
So let's talk about science denial, which seems to be this huge problem right now, you know, with the Trump administration, with all the churches that are suing governments for the shutdown, with all of the people rallying at capitals without their masks. Why all this science denial?
Yeah, well, it's not science denial across the board. It's particular kinds of science denial that's related to some core value people hold. So in the case of religious extremists, you know, they're worried about you know, things like the teaching of evolution, because that threatens their worldview. But they accept, say, the germ theory of disease or plate tectonics for geology or the Big Bang theory if they can make it fit their religion. So they're only denying things that are particularly related to something they care about. In the case of conservatives with climate change, you know, they accept most other science, but that particular one got affiliated with Al Gore, who was, you know, the vice president of the Democratic Party for 8 years. So he's, you know, so climate science became a liberal cause that conservatives feel they have to oppose.
But isn't there a religious motivation, the theological idea that this world is not my home, it's just a stepping stone to eternal life, so who cares?
Yeah, that's right. Yeah, this is just a temporary staging area in the great proscenium of life that's going to carry on for eternity. What difference does it make what we do in the next 20 years on one little planet? Yeah, that's a worrisome one. Fortunately, a lot of religious people don't go that far, but enough of them do. And unfortunately, they also play power politics with money and supporting certain candidates. You know, The Power Worshippers, Catherine Stewart's new book, is a fantastic and disturbing read. I thought that the religious right had kind of gone away and lost power, but no, I had no idea they were, well, you guys probably do because you track this more closely, but, you know, the sort of controlling think tanks and politicians and prayer breakfasts and all that stuff, it's like, wow, you know, that what a rigged system this is.
Yeah,
so, Michael, do you think that the people who are in denial about how to prevent the coronavirus, the people who don't want to wear masks and are agitating against shutdowns, are these the same people who deny climate change?
Yeah, a lot of them are related to that. Again, it has to do with what they think of as freedom. You know, I should be free. My business should be free from government regulation. I can pollute all I want. Or I should be free from the government telling me I have to wear masks. These people have a peculiar idea of what freedom means. You know, it's not you can do anything you want. That's not what freedom means. I mean, you're not free to drive on the left side of the road. You give up that freedom for security. The freedom for you to swing your arm ends at my nose. So I should be, you know, you said I should be free to walk around society without a mask. Well, I should be free from your contagious germs. My
right.
Freedom, your freedom. It's, you know, all freedoms are pushing against other freedoms and issues of security. The whole point of civil society is to give up freedoms for security, and we all do it. Including, you know, extreme libertarians and anarcho-capitalists, they're happy to give up freedoms if it means their safety. But they, you know, they just focus on one. There was that guy on the news last night ranting about, he was in a Costco and didn't want to wear his mask, and they kicked him out. And he was screaming and yelling about, you know, I live in the United States of America, we're free, and I have the Constitution. And he was just delusional about what freedom means.
So we have about 1 minute left, Michael. Sorry it's gone so fast here. Your article raises an interesting point here that you call a cycle of conspiracism, where maybe the government doesn't believe it, but they play off the people. Can you explain that real quick?
Yeah, well, I do think, you know, it's conspiracy theories on the left and the right, and they kind of accelerate each other. Trump, of course, is the master at this. And, you know, he's introduced a new kind of conspiracism that is a conspiracy theory without the theory. He just asserts it. You know, people are saying, what people? Where? And he doesn't specify where. And, you know, so here I invoke Hitchens' dictum. Christopher Hitchens said, you know, that which can be asserted without evidence can be dismissed without evidence. Just dismiss these crazy people.
Yeah,
well,
that's a very good line.
Thank you, Michael Shermer. Keep up the good work.
Well, you too. I always admire you guys from afar and hope you keep up the good work, as we need it.
Michael Shermer.
Thank you.
Editor of Skeptic magazine and author of many books, including the brand new book, Giving the Devil His Due. So that's our show for today. We want to thank you for listening. We want to thank our producer, our engineer, Buzz Kemper, in Audio for the Arts in downtown Madison, Wisconsin. And we also want to thank listeners in Pennsylvania and New Jersey to WOOMLP. In Madison, Wisconsin, to WIDE and WMUU. In Janesville, Wisconsin, Community Radio WADR. In Central Texas, College Station in Bryan, Texas, where Texas A&M is, KEOS. Listeners in Central Missouri, in Columbia, to KOPN. WOOL Black Sheep Radio in Bellows Falls, Vermont, and New Hampshire. WRFI in Central New York. And also hello to all you podcast listeners. If you like our show, give us a thumbs up on your podcast provider. And tell your friends to visit our show at ffrf.org/radio.
And, of course, you can follow FFRF on social media, Facebook and Twitter. But we would love to have you join us at ffrf.org. You can also ask for information. We have a fantastic newspaper called Free Thought Today, and we'd love to send you a complimentary copy, a brochure about our 40-plus years of accomplishments as a National State Church watchdog working very diligently to keep religion out of government and promote reason in social policy. We invite you to tune in next week for more Rational Radio and Blasphemous Broadcasting.
Free Thought Radio is a production of the Freedom From Religion Foundation, FFRF.org. Irreverent views, news, music, and interviews brought to you by Annie Laurie Gaylor and Dan Barker.
I hope someday.